Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Hour of Timber and Building Supplies 1840 podcast. I'm Paul Bullivant, your host. And today's episode, we're going to cast the spotlight on our Wakefield branch. So I'm delighted to be joined by my two colleagues, Martin Hughes and Steve Baxter.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
Hello.
Let's start at the beginning then. Do you want to introduce yourselves, who you are, what your job is?
Yeah.
And a bit about your career.
So
before you came to Howard.
I'm Martin Hughes. I'm the branch manager at Wakefield Branch. I've been there about 5 years now. I previously worked for Travis Perkins for 21 years.
Yep.
So I've been in merchanting most of my adult life. I had a couple of other little jobs beforehand, one working in a sport shop. And a paper round, basically.
A paper round? That's not a job.
Yeah, I've worked in merchanting most of my adult life, so.
How did you end up working in a sports shop?
It started off as a Saturday job.
Right.
When I were at college, or when I were at school, and then when I were at college. And I had a couple of free days at college, and I ended up doing a couple of days in the week. And then when I left college, that ended up being permanent for a year before I got my job at Travis Perkins.
And then what?
Management trainee.
Okay.
Which...
What brought you into... that, just looking for a job that was looking for something that was more of a career than a job?
Yeah. So working in a sports shop is pretty boring unless it's Saturday or Sunday when it's busy. And I wanted something a bit more challenging. And I saw a job come up for Travis Perkins, which were management trainee, and it offered a day at college with an HNC, business studies HNC, and you worked in various different branches. It looked interesting. I didn't really know what builders merchants did at the time. And then I went down to the local branch, had a look round and had my job interview and sort of the rest of history, really. That were 97.
And here you are still in the industry.
Yeah.
So what is it about the industry then that has kept you in it?
I think for me, it's the variety on a daily basis. You're never doing the same thing twice. You're always coming across something you've never come across before. The people you meet as well, both customers and staff I think there's plenty of characters in this industry, and so you always have a good laugh and a good crack with people. It's just interesting, the variety of products we deal with.
Yeah.
One day you might be out in the yard helping the customer out or unloading something, next day you're in your office doing budget meetings, or it could be away at a conference or a supplier, or you don't know what you're going to get when you walk in the morning to what day you're going to have.
Have you ever thought of changing career?
Not really, no. I don't think I'd be fit for anywhere. Spoilt now.
Obviously, I know this about you, and it always makes me smile when I think about it. So I'm going to ask you about it. Tell us about your kickboxing career.
Right. So yeah, my kickboxing career, that sort of started post lockdown, post COVID, when you were allowed to go back out and do sports. My little laddie decided he wanted to go to martial arts because a few of his mates were there. So I took him down. Sat watching him for a few sessions a night, a week, and I thought this would be a good idea. I fancy this. I did a bit of taekwondo when I were about 8 or 10 years old, so I thought, yeah, this will be fun. So I started doing that and enjoyed the training, enjoyed the fitness, needed to lose a little bit of weight, which I did, and then got into sparring, and that were just a different kettle of fish altogether. That war, it were a lot more physical, hell of a lot more physical than the actual training. Really enjoyed it. Got battered a few times. I've had a few black eyes, a few bruises here and there.
I thought you'd be turning up here with a black eye, to be honest.
No, if it's filmed on a Thursday, maybe. always tends to happen when I've got a meeting or something the next day. So, and then I entered a few competitions and ended up competing. And it was just something. I like to challenge myself physically and, as well as mentally.
And you've gone through all the rankings and you're up to a black belt now.
Yes, I got my black belt in November.
Oh, nice.
Which took 3 years.
Must be really chuffed with that.
Yeah, I am, yeah. It's just one of them things. I think it's one of them things I sort of set myself a goal of becoming a black belt, yeah.
Nice. That's good stuff. And then one final thing before we move on to Steve. Your movie career.
Yeah.
Where have you been? I've been waiting all day for this.
Been stuck in traffic all morning.
It's not my problem. Half of this is missing.
You better ring him in office, pal, because I'm just the driver.
It's just not good enough.
Well, where would you like me to stick it?
Well, you're going to have to stick it over there.
No, I'd like to stick it.
I tell you where I would like to stick in. It's a classic, a classic one. Don't just tell us about what that was.
So this was not long after I got to Out of Timber. I was asked to do or help in a customer service video. And what we did a good version, a bad version. I think that's just the bad version.
That's the bad version.
And sort of what not to do and what to do. And it was quite funny, really, but it gets the message across.
He's a really good piece of work.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe in all fairness, we should have showed you giving good service rather than just that. But we should point out that's not your normal.
That's not my normal.
Of looking after customers.
But I think, again, anybody who's been around merchant industry will understand that that does happen in places. Yeah. And
everywhere.
Everywhere. And I think most people watching it will probably see a little bit of themselves in there, or certainly maybe a member of staff in their branch that is a little bit like that. So, yeah.
Nice. Good stuff.
Thank you. Steve Baxter, yes. Over to you.
From Wakefield, Health in Wakefield, obviously. And I've been there 44 years.
Lovely. Well, not quite.
Not quite. Sorry, next month is 44 years.
1st of March, 1981. 43 years and...
A lot of days.
11 months. So close.
So I'm so close. I'm on the borderline. So before Haworth, I lived in Leeds, and I left school more or less and went to work a little part-time job in between. Then joined a motor spares kind of shop, which did all sorts of exhausts and brake linings all the way through it. In there, I got taught how to actually reline brake shoes for trains.
Oh, nice.
At 16 years old, which is quite baffling, really. They let me do this train. So I did that. And then I moved across over to Wakefield with my father and my brother. And then I was off work. And I ended up picking this one up at Howarth in Wakefield on a youth op scheme, a yop lad, as they call them. Earning massive amounts of money, something like...
How much?
£21.50 a week, I think it was. So
you did the big time there.
I was flying then, I was really flying. But I wasn't there too long before they said to me, do you want to join us on the team? Which was brilliant. And ever since then, I've been there and I've enjoyed every day.
So 43 years, amazing, isn't it? I mean, I think as a company, we pride ourselves on the longevity of our staff, but nearly 44 years, that still only makes you the fourth longest serving member of staff
in the group
that we've got in the business, which is unbelievable. We've got Dave Marshall at York, who's done 45 years. We've got Rodney Fell at Dewsbury, who's done 47. And Dave Fogg at York, who's done 54. So you're properly the youngster in amongst all.
I'm still in that queue.
That's amazing. What's made you stay so long?
I feel like Martin says, the merchanting is a day-to-day job. And every day is slightly different. So it's not a conveyor belt where you're just on and on. It's different every day. Yeah. It might be a difference in the customer's different, or a telephone call becomes different to go find something else, a specialised product. So every day is different. So it's not mind-bending of a day, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's all broken up into little particles of the day.
Okay. Have you ever thought of moving on during that period?
Not really, no, because I enjoy what I'm doing, so... I've no need to think, don't need something else out of this. Because every day being different, I'm learning daily sometimes as well.
Yeah.
So which I enjoy doing.
So you know, not only have you been here for 44 years, you were telling me just before we started recording that you used to bring your kids into work.
Yeah, well, they were employed as Saturday and Sunday staff, which was great. They enjoyed the work ethic of it all. They were meeting people at the same time, customers, and helping to a certain degree. And I think it's also set them in good stead, being in that environment at a young age, to move on.
I've been able to talk to people.
To talk to people, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, you know.
I say that to my my kids. What have they gone on to do?
My daughter has her own hair and beauty salon.
Yeah.
My son is a computer analyst type thing in a company.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of skills we learn in our industry that we don't give credit for. The main one being the ability to talk to people and have a conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm forever talking to my two kids who are just constantly on TikTok and on the phones, just looking down like this. Yeah. Saying,
well, it's funny that, because I've sort of noticed with younger people that are coming through now, They tend to communicate with the customers a lot more on like WhatsApp and emails, and sort of get a bit frustrated and a bit old school. Just pick phone up and answer.
And talk.
It's like you can get done five messages, you can one phone call for a couple of minutes, and you've negated five or six messages backwards and forwards.
And my son does,
and that. You know it's understood.
Yeah, it was my son's computer and phones, and my daughter's obviously face to face. It's her salon. Yeah. It's a one-to-one scenario. Yeah, what they want to do.
It does worry me that ability for the younger generation, because of social media, the ability to talk to people and have conversations is becoming a dying art. And you know, I say to mine, if you can get through your life and be able to talk to people and hold a conversation and make people interested in you by you talking to them, you'll never go wrong. You'll just get through it all.
Yeah.
What were we doing opening on Sunday?
That's how it was then, them days.
When's them days?
When my daughters and my son were there, they lived in the 2000s. But in the olden days, in the 80s, he had a Sunday trading law. So we opened them, but all customers had to sign in to negate the law somehow. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but they had to sign in to get into the store.
I suppose that were days when, before like there's like B&Q and Selco and Wickes and places like that then.
Were we busy on Sundays?
Yes, very busy.
Just selling general builders merchants?
Just all well, in them days, until 84, the builders merchant was 1984, but in the shop in the early 80s was when we did all that. We sold everything basically in the shops. We crammed it all in with a garden centre, huge garden centre there. We sold records, singles, believe it or not. We had a record stand at the corner of the counter.
What kind of records?
The up-to-date records of the time. The singles.
Well, the chart stuff?
Yeah, the singles for the charts.
No.
And you would flick through it and choose a record before you left. Now, those are the proper adult sales.
Three bags of cement and a record.
And a record, of course.
And I have the latest album.
Good for a birthday present. You know, if you forgot the birthday present, you have a single.
Do you reckon we're missing a trick then? We ought to bring that back?
No,
they don't have records anymore.
Of course,
CD.
That's all streaming to. Yeah. So we, because of your 44 years service, you were featured in our company magazine, The Network.
Yes,
a couple of, well, maybe it was the last edition or a couple of editions ago. In it, you talk about your special place, your shed.
My shed, yeah.
Tell us about your shed. Come on.
Well, it's just a place where, but I like being outside in the garden. So in springtime and summertime is my go to area. So I like to do the garden when best I can. But my shed's like where I keep all my tools and all my mowers, things like that. It's full of my grandson's stuff at the moment, but we'll move on with that one. But yeah, I know what all my tools are. It's all, you know, it's linked to where I know screwdrivers will be in that pocket and spanners. And it's all laid out, so I know what it is. So if it goes missing, I know it's missing half the time.
Please tell me it's not on a board on the wall with a silhouette of the tool.
Certain parts are, not all of it.
Like his desk is.
Go on.
He's got a stapler blue tacked down to a certain.
You dealt with
yeah. Challenge, yeah.
What does it...
Tidiest desk in... So he's got tidiest desk in office.
Just why? Why did he blue tack your stapler?
Well, once or twice, I went to pick my stapler up and it wasn't there. So I thought, right, if I tack it down, it'd be nice and neat and they won't take it anymore because they think, oh, I don't want to take that.
So what you're saying is you don't trust your colleagues?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I definitely trust them.
Quick, retract that statement on camera quick.
But no, it's just a go-to place where I know it's going to be all the time. That's what it's all about.
His desk that clean and tidy?
Yeah, it is, yeah. Everything is... Steve's probably about one of the most organised in the office for where everything is and his file and everything, definitely.
You see, that always worries me if you see a desk that's really, really tidy because that says to me, no work going on here.
Oh, no, that's not true.
It's not true.
No, not true.
Are you sure it's not true?
Yeah, definitely.
But your shed's just like that. Everything in its place.
Yeah, as best I can get. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Right. Let's move on to the branch. But before we move on to the branch, I want to talk a bit about Wakefield, the town.
Wakefield, the town.
Because I've worked from Wakefield for 7 years.
It's a city, isn't it?
City, it's like a cathedral.
City.
Yeah, you see.
It's not a cathedral.
Yeah. I've worked there for 7 years, right? And I've never particularly paid a huge amount of attention to it other than coming to work. So before I did this, I thought I'd just do a little bit of research. So some facts about Wakefield. You're right, it's a city, not a town, because it's got a
cathedral.
Wakefield is a cathedral city in West Yorkshire with a population of 97,870. You know that?
No, it's not a real big city, is it?
Mm. No. So I'm going to test your knowledge of other cities and towns and their populations, just to see your understanding of geography and what have you. So Oldham, so a town where we've got a branch, does Oldham have a larger or smaller population? Don't overthink it.
Oh, I think it's larger.
You think Oldham's larger? Yes.
Compact, yeah.
Correct. Oldham's larger. It's got 110,000 people.
Well done.
Steve, Chester.
Mm. Chester. I would think Chester was smaller.
Correct.
It's more compact.
Slightly smaller. 92,000 people. And the final one, Donny.
Bigger. Definitely bigger. 250,000 people.
Well, according to Google, Doncaster is smaller and it's got 87,000 people. So there must be a metropolitan area, you'll think.
Yeah, it's a big metropolitan area. Yeah.
But Doncaster itself is small. So you've learnt something today. It's the home of Wakefield Trinity Rugby League Club, formed in 1873, making it one of the oldest rugby league clubs in the world.
It's the first one.
Yep. Mm. It's famous for fruit. Which fruit?
Wakefield is?
Yeah.
A fruit?
Yeah. Come on. Apparently it's really, really famous for this fruit.
We're not talking about the rhubarb triangle, are we?
Rhubarb.
Right, rhubarb triangle, yeah.
Yeah. And it's part of the rhubarb triangle.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I did. Yeah.
What was the problem? Didn't you realise rhubarb was a fruit?
No, I didn't realise rhubarb was a fruit.
It's the only sort of place where rhubarb grows. There's only a few places rhubarb grows wild.
The main triangle is mainly Rothwell, I believe.
So it says. So we're going to have to recheck whether rhubarb's a fruit. If it's not a fruit, what is it?
I don't know. I didn't think it was a fruit, that's all. But I do recall going out.
Oh, our in-depth knowledge of all things Wakefield is coming to a full bit. Wakefield is located in the rhubarb triangle. Do you know there's a rhubarb triangle?
I've heard of this, but I just can't remember.
A region known for its forced rhubarb production. The rhubarb triangle is a 9 square mile area of farmland that includes Wakefield, Morley and Rothwell. The soil in the rhubarb triangle is ideal for growing rhubarb because it's rich in nitrogen and the area's cold, wet winters are perfect for growing rhubarb, which is native to Siberia. That's interesting.
That's interesting.
Not cold, wet summers as well.
Its 14th century cathedral has Yorkshire's tallest spire at 75 metres, beating York Minster by 3 metres.
Right.
Can you believe that? I've got a list of the 5 most famous people originally from Wakefield. Can we guess any?
I can't.
No.
No?
No.
You don't know your town, your city very well. Barbara Hepworth.
Of course, Abel the Magillian.
Perhaps Wakefield's most celebrated citizen. Barbara Hepworth was a British sculptor born in Wakefield in 1903. She has an illustrious career spanning 5 decades and made her name as one of the leading figures in the international art scene, forever immortalised with the opening of the Hepworth Gallery. Yeah. One of Wakefield's most visited destinations.
Which is bang opposite our branch.
Which is on Treasure Branch.
Is it?
Yeah. It's about 100 yards on opposite side of the road to us.
Did you go see that little church on the bridge?
It's opposite.
It's opposite there.
What's the church called? Because that's famous as well.
Chantry Bridge Church.
Chantry Bridge Church, yeah.
Dare I ask why that's famous?
The clues are there.
Chantry Bridge. I've no idea.
Do you know?
No.
Okay. This little segment is going down really well with our in-depth knowledge of Wakefield. Helen Worth. Best known as Gail Platt from Coronation Street.
Right, yeah.
She doesn't live there, does she?
No, she was born here. This is all Google, so don't blame me. Jeff Boycott, one of the most celebrated English cricketers, with a career spanning from the 60s to the 80s. He cites over 100 test match appearances for England and was the leading test run scorer for Yorkshire with over 8,000 test runs. And finally, Jane McDonald.
Yes, she's actually been in the branch.
She has, Anne.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, she has, yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah, most famous for being a regular co-presenter of the daytime TV show Loose Women, Jane McDonald rose to fame after appearing on the BBC show The Cruise in 1998.
Yeah, that used to come in a bit, didn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
You see? Well, that segment was an absolute nightmare, and we shan't be doing that again.
Let's move on.
I enjoyed that.
Well, hosting that.
Oh, yeah, that's like it.
I was just trying to freshen things up a little bit. Right, history of the branch.
Steve probably knows a little bit more than me. No,
what do we know about the history of the branch?
I think it's been there about 100 years, hasn't it? The branch. Mm. Did buy it off Ernest... What were it called?
From Earnshaw.
Earnshaw's, yeah. I think it started off as Earnshaw's timber.
Yep.
About 100, 150 years ago on the actual site that we're at now.
Okay.
Probably changed a little bit over the time and grown a little bit, but originally the timber was imported via narrow boats, which the canal runs right along the back of us. I think Steve's got a few stories about that.
On
the timber being offloaded.
Yeah,
on
yeah.
barges.
Well, so much on the barges, but we used to offload it in the yard.
Yeah.
For the barge, after the barges, and then lay it out in the yard rather than put it onto the racks.
Right.
So you wouldn't just put a pack on a rack. We'd lay the timbers out against the canal side, so customers could come along and just choose as and what they wanted from there. Yeah.
And it's grown over years, and we've done quite a lot of different things there now. We're Miller's own mouldings and PSEs. We've got a big kitchen showroom.
Yep.
Probably one of the biggest shops, I think, that they've got here with timber.
When was that development? That would be 2019, would it be?
The revamp.
Yeah, the revamp would be about...
2018,
yeah.
Because that was a massive change, wasn't it? I know when I first joined the business in the beginning of 2018,
yeah,
it was quite an old, it was quite dark and dingy area. Now it, you know, had a full refurb. It's beautiful.
What we do there was, you know, we got the shop, the DIY.
Yeah.
And then next door we've got the builders. So we took everything out of the shop. We totally cleared the shop wall to wall, floor to ceiling, and put it all in the builders. And we still traded as a DIY in the builders.
You literally sort of change a whole branch around then,
yeah.
Yeah. Where the timber was is now the building stuff. Where the building was, now the timber.
Yeah.
And it has literally sort of gone back to front, hasn't it? To where it was originally. So yeah.
So we've seen a lot of change over the last few years. What about the? You want to talk a little bit about the team, the people that you've got.
Yeah, we've got a really good team in Wakefield. We've got 25 staff there. And again, sort of varying from a couple of years' experience right through to such as Steve. And there's a few other members of staff where they're into the, I think we've got one other that's done over 40. Yeah. We've got three or four that are all into 30 years plus service. And then down to 20s, 15s, down to sort of new starters that have just started a few months ago. So there's a real wide variety of experience there.
How do you think you'll go about replacing those guys when their careers come to an end? Because we'd also talked about kids nowadays not struggling to communicate as well as we'd hope they would because of the impact of phones and what have you. How are you going to go about replacing that kind of experience?
Very difficult.
Yeah.
That's one of the sort of things I've seen change over my management career is the... It's getting more difficult to get people with experience, and then it's also getting more difficult to get people that want to learn that job to the sort of depths that Steve and probably myself and other people in the industry that have been around a few years have. I think the internet makes things a little bit easier to research now.
Yep.
Sort of going back to when I were learning how to do a job, and I got people that have been in industry 30, 40 years before I was sort of teaching me and passing their knowledge down. And sort of one of the things I learned, it wasn't what you knew, because you can't know about everything. It was about where to go to get that information. And that were done by ringing suppliers and speaking to supplier sales reps and sales officers and getting information that way. And I think you take it in a little bit more and get that experience. And I think now we're into the generation of either they want instant knowledge or they don't want to know about it a little bit, and it is a bit more difficult. But again, it comes down to the guys that ask the questions, isn't it? And if you've got a person in your branch that's constantly asking questions, that constantly want to learn, they're the people that are going to replace such as Steve. Yeah.
But I think you need to know the basics of something. It's like typing timber into a computer. It'll bring you all the info you want to. You've got to tell it more of what you want. Yeah. You have to understand what you want.
Yeah.
To actually put into the computer. But to tell you what you want, you know. Yeah.
I think one of the things that this has definitely sort of been Steve's career path and my career path and probably most people and yours, Paul, we all started off at the bottom in the yard.
Yeah.
We learnt the business. We literally drove a forklift, loaded lorries, loaded customers, unloaded stuff, stacked the shelves, then worked on the counter, then worked in the sales office, and for me went into management. And I think that sort of that our generation, that's how we've literally come through the business from scratch. think the trouble is with the younger generation is they want to be a manager straight away, or they want to be a sales rep straight away without that basic knowledge, really, and the basic building blocks.
I think you bang on. My career is exactly the same as yours. Management trainee scheme, do every, you know, over the years, do every job in a builder's merchant to get you the background to everything before.
I mean, one thing that sort of the management trainee scheme I did at Travis, it were absolutely fantastic, really. And you literally had to do 6 months in the yard. You did 6 months on a counter in a branch, and each module of that were done at a different branch. 3 months in one office, 3 months in another, and then 3 months shadowing a manager. And then you were sort of had to go out and find your own job within the company, or hopefully you'd impress some manager in a branch that wanted to keep you at their branch. And I think that worked really well because you got to know the business from the bottom.
Yeah. How do you think you can combat those generational differences, though? Because our kind of generation of that willing to grind out, you know, from the bottom, learn every job, is very different now. I mean, there'll not be many. I can't imagine many people born in the 2000s onwards who will ever do 44 years in one place, because that just doesn't happen now.
No, I mean, what's the stats part? Is there something about, on average, people do about 5 years in one week?
Yeah, I think maybe even the younger you are, the less it is. It's whereas in our generation, it was a badge of honour to have done 20 years in one place. It's probably now seen doing 20 years in one place as a bit we've not learned that much, and you're better off having three or four jobs in 20 years to pick up different things.
Yeah.
How do you think, because our industry is so, it's so reliant on people having knowledge and understanding about, because we sell components, don't we? Not boxes.
Basically.
We sell this and this together to do that. So it does need knowledge. How do you think we combat those generational changes to be able to give people the knowledge that we'd have gone through over the years?
I think it's difficult, isn't it? I think it's, again, probably, I mean, we use online training quite a lot now. And I think that probably appeals more to the younger people rather than going and finding the information themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, we try and do quite a bit on face-to-face training, don't we? We try and do that and get suppliers into the branch on a regular basis to train as staff and train as customers as well. And do breakfast morning with customers. And then at the same time, they might do breakfast morning with customers, but then in afternoon, spend a couple of hours with staff going through their products and things. And I just think sometimes the patience in there with the younger people to sit and learn and put that time into it, really.
I think it's before, different. When I first started, I was in the DIY, and I did sort of 81 to 84 in the shop, and then it says, we're opening building materials up. Put my hand up, obviously, interested. And then we opened the builder's yard up. So I went from the shop into the builder's yard, which was a whole different array of products. You know, sort of, well, all great to everyone. We went on courses, things like that, went to British Gypsum and the different suppliers. And we learned about it all. And that's another badge that you've got there, thinking, right, I've got the shop, I've got that pretty much nailed. Now more to this one.
Something else.
Yeah.
I think it's just something, I asked you the question and it's a bit of a poison chalice because there isn't an answer to it, is that you can't fight generational change. But I think the thing that makes a builder's merchants are people, and the knowledgeable people and all those things. We've just got to keep working hard
that's always going to be our unique selling point, isn't it? That we have that knowledge within the branch, we can offer that customer service, and we actually know what we're selling, we know what we're talking about, and we know what we're selling. I think that is the USP of the industry, really, isn't it?
It's interesting you're saying that. We're just on another episode with a customer for the first time, and I was asking him what's good about builders merchants and what problems do we cause the trade, and he was talking about the USP of the people.
Yeah,
you can build relationships, and they almost become a silent partner in his business, because they look after him, they make sure he's got the right products, the quality, and what have you. And then he also talked about that, about knowledge, about how we'll get customers come in who don't quite know, but kind of broadly know what they want, but don't know exactly what they want. They think they want this, but when we talk to them, it's this that they want. And he was talking about the importance of that. So that echoes the two things that you've just said.
I think it is important. And It's definitely an industry where people deal with people.
Yeah.
I've got customers that I deal with now that I dealt with 15, 20 years ago, some of them, and I speak to on a daily basis, and they've sort of followed me around. Hopefully that's because I've provided them with good customer service.
Yeah. It's also, as well, even though we don't stock it, doesn't mean we can't get it. So you can't keep everything on. No one can keep anything on everything on the ground.
Yeah, you can't know about everything, can you, either?
But if we don't stock it, you know, we can get it. We can supply it. Like I did one other month that you saw.
That's the skill to it.
Did a complete roof, two roofs in two houses, and fitted solar panels to them as well. We got the lot.
You were saying.
That's the skill to merchanting, really, isn't it? Is knowing where to go for that information, knowing where the supplier is. I mean, still, Steve will echo this, but even... We all have years' experience, so there'll be that phone call probably on a daily basis where we're coming across a product we'd never heard of. I had that yesterday.
Yeah. What would, so the question to both answer together, there's obviously a lot of, in every town and city, there's lots of competition. There must be, I don't know, six or eight builders merchants in Wakefield, I would think, or, you know, associate if you're putting screw fixes and tool stations to it as well. What's Wakefield Branch's USP? What are the things that make it stand out and are the reason why customers should come to you rather than go down the road?
I think the service we provide, the staff we've got and the knowledge they have and the amount of product we have in stock as well. It's quite a big branch, so we're lucky we can buy things in bulk, and we've got quite a lot of different lines. We've got a lot of different products we offer.
Plenty of stock on the ground.
Yeah.
People.
And just the service we provide. We provide a good customer service.
With the knowledge as well, when they come in to you with not a problem, but an idea they've got, like you were saying earlier, Paul, you can maybe sometimes twist it around, so why not do it this way? Is that an easy... Whoa, I never thought of that.
Yeah.
Just a little...
I think most customers will probably shop in a merchant predominantly because, one, they've got the stock, two... they're getting good customer service and prices right. I mean, price is always an issue always, isn't it, for most customers. But I think ultimately it's how quick they get dealt with, how well they get dealt with, and make sure we've got the stock. And I think we do that pretty well at Wakefield.
Yeah, no, I would agree. See, you're obviously in 44 years, you've seen lots of highs and lows while you've been at the branch. Give us a couple of an example of one of the highs and one of the lows.
I think one of the highs, which we got started with at the beginning, were my children working there.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because on a regular basis, they give me a story about the day, many years ago, but I still remember some of them, and what they'd done in day, and how Steve Tissington, who was the line manager then, Steve looked after the one, you know, the shop floor, things like that. And they enjoyed it, the banter, the actual working ethics of it all. And the stories I got from them, I'm quite proud of that because they were learning on a live daily basis.
Yeah.
You know, and that was really good.
Yeah, I like that. It's good.
On the lows, I know
you're going to say that there haven't been any lows, but life's full of ups and downs. That's just part of the cycle of life. So there must have been some things that have just, you look back and think, flipping.
The only lows that I would think, which makes mind in a big field, would be when you lose a job over something that really they bought a lesser product or something like that, and you think, you know what I mean? I got you the right product. And things like that, the little blips whereby you think, well, I did all that work and I haven't got the job. And it's a bit hurting sometimes, but you put the right thing forward, that's the main thing. And if they haven't bought the spec that you were offering, well and good.
Similar, not exactly the same question, but similar question to you. You've had a number of challenges over the last 3 or 4 years, particularly at Wakefield.
Yeah.
You touch on a couple of the challenges and more importantly, what you've learned about yourself.
So
from facing them. Life's full of ups and downs and we all face challenges no matter who we are, what we do. I'm just intrigued on.
So I actually started at Wakefield about 4 weeks before COVID hit. So I think that was my first big challenge, my massive challenge. And I remember, because you held a senior leadership meeting, didn't you, in Wakefield, about COVID, the day it sort of all kicked off. I remember you sort of asking me up for a manager's perspective on it, and I was absolutely crapping my pants, basically, thinking
that
about...
That was a strange meeting. That was the day after the
We're all shutting down. It was like, yeah, that were a bit doomsday meeting, that one, wasn't it? But again, we got over that. We'd open, we shut down for a week and we reopened.
In fact, you were one of the...
Who
said, can we open?
Yeah, there were Wakefield and Oldham. Yeah. And we were the first two branches to open. And initially we did that, basically telephone sales and on a call collect basis. We did delivery only for the first month and then call collect the month afterwards. And then we sort of put things into place where we opened fully within a couple of months after that. There were controls on how many people we could let in the branch. And
do you remember how you got colleagues to come in? Because I remember us saying, yes, you can open, but you've got to get, we'll have to leave it with you to get people to come in.
Yeah.
If you'd only been there 4 or 5 weeks, that was quite a task to get them. Because with all the unknown that was going on, to trust you to look after them when they came in was quite a big thing.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we had, there was some staff that were very uncertain about it, and you could sort of quickly identify them guys, and it were, well, we'll not ask them because I've obviously got issues about it, which were fine. And then there were other guys that wanted to be back at work, and it were them that sort of initially came back in. And we had a small, in fact, we actually pulled a team in from, there were three or four from Wakefield, there were three or four from Doncaster, a couple of guys from York as well. So we actually pulled from a few different branches.
I see.
Which were great because you got to work with people you wouldn't usually work with, and it were quite a close team to start with, which it were challenging. And then we got everybody else back in, and people sort of settled down to how it was going to be until obviously the restrictions lifted. But it were interesting times. I mean, having queue of traffic down the road at 7 o'clock in the morning, literally.
What did you learn about yourself though through that?
I think being able to adapt to change. And very quickly being able to adapt. I mean, what were a regulation one day, we're relaxed next day, and then suddenly it were put back into place again, and you had to sort of change the whole shop round and the whole business round. But it were very interesting.
We had the collection points, didn't we? The collection points,
we sort of car park based.
Scattered all around the yard.
We employed somebody to stand on the gate and literally let people in and out.
At a time. And you could only go to that collection points, A, B or C.
It were that busy.
Yeah.
We had that many people coming in. And you're inundated from 7 o'clock in the morning till you shut the gate at 5 o'clock at night.
Can you believe that was 5 years ago?
Yeah.
It was 5 years ago.
Yeah. A different world.
So obviously, when you mentioned it, you start thinking about it, you think, crack, that was a massive change, wasn't it? It was only 5 years ago. Yeah, it seems a lifetime ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It's like, it's another world away, isn't it?
You've had some other challenges after that, with some staff leaving the branch and it affecting the long term team.
Yeah.
How did you deal with that, and what did you?
Well, again, I mean, we had a lot of staff leave in a very short period of time because a competitor opened up. That were daunting. That were very, very daunting to start off with. I see Wakefield branch as my business.
Yeah.
It's under my care while I'm managing it. Sort of scratched my head for the first day or two, thinking, right, how are we going to put this right? How are we going to carry on and the threats to your business from a competitor? I think sort of one thing I learned about myself is that I needed to ask for help. At first, I thought I was going to have to do it all by myself, and anyone who were drawing on the team that I had around me at the time, which supported me, and they all sort of dug in deep and got on with it. And again, with the sort of wider team we in our timber, the other managers at my brand, the other managers we in my regional director, Nick, you guys in commercial, everybody sort of pulled together and we put a plan in place, and I think that's been pretty successful, and it wasn't actually as bad as what I thought it was going to be in the end.
I think there are two important lessons though, about one, asking for help, and two, not always fearing the worst when you're faced with
things. And I think for me, that's probably one of my downfalls is I will try and do things by myself until I get to a point where I know I can't. And at that, I think that sort of taught me that I don't need to leave it to that point. I need to ask.
So why would you try and do it yourself?
I don't know. I've always been independent.
Pride.
Independence, yeah.
Do you think that's taught you
going through what you went through with it, has that taught you a lesson that will stay with you, do you think?
Yeah, yeah. Sort of have a bit more faith in them around you.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You two obviously know each other pretty well. You work together really closely.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, you know each other pretty well.
Yeah.
Wellish. This is another one, might another test of this.
So this is the last question before we start the wrap up.
What was that game show where they used to do this with husband and wife? They'd get it wrong.
Oh, yeah, Mr. and Mrs.
We'll be falling out on my home with car, won't we?
After my attempt at doing the segment on Wakefield, we're not going down that one. So, you know each other very well, you work together very well. Right, so, Steve.
Mm?
Describe Martin in three words.
Martin, three words. Caring, thoughtful, reliable.
That's nice. Martin, describe Steve in three words.
Reliable, knowledgeable, interesting.
Oh, go on, interesting. Why is he interesting?
I don't know. Steve's a bit of a character, and I think he's quite a strong character within Bram. Mm. And it's just, you know what I mean? I just find Steve interesting in so much stories he's got to tell and things like that.
They're good. Looking at it, like, I don't work with you day to day, but I work with you and around you, so I know you reasonably well. And I think they're beautiful descriptions. I think you both described each other, you know, really, really well. And your strength, to me, is all the personal trait stuff that Steve said to you. And you are interested because you've always got a story. Whenever I walk past and just say hello, you know, you're not going to be able to walk past because there's going to be a story. About something, there's something like that, and there'll be a blast from.
You know, you're going to get a story, or you're going to get it in neck about somewhere, just stick.
Or you're going to get on a stick because somebody's nicked me staple. No, just not. It's just, life's just not.
On staple hunts,
not straight. That's really good.
That's good. That will do.
I think me and Steve are on opposites, where you're a lot more fiery than I probably am, and I'm probably a lot more relaxed.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I've never seen you fiery.
Yeah, I do get a little bit now and again.
You get agitated.
If it's not my way, yeah. I like to go my way.
We have three levels.
We were going to wrap this up, but now we're found. This is an interesting bit of that.
This is the level that the audience see.
This is so we know somebody's annoyed Steve, maybe it's a supplier or something. We get the three levels. We get stern word, first level. Second one is stood up at his desk on phone to him. We're giving him a stern word. And the third one is stapler and phone gets slammed down on desk. That's when it's real bad. That's when things aren't going.
I just got over the edge there.
So if I'm walking past in the shop and I see him stood up with his phone in his hand, keep out of the road.
Yeah. If the phone goes down, then definitely keep out of play for an hour or two.
You need a better poker face. Yes, there is. You can't give it all away like that.
Right, that's good. We'll start wrapping up. So finish with our quick fire questions as we do with everybody, just to learn a little bit more about you.
Favourite part of your job?
Customers and solving problems and getting things that they can't get hold of. Just making people happy in general, basically. Getting it right.
I don't think you go far wrong in life if you always try and help people. I think when you do that to people, the world has a way of just reflecting it back to you and you know, and good things come your way. So I like that one.
Again, people, I think, really. Both staff and customers. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to copy all the answers here. Are we? So I'll just ask one of you here.
Yeah. No.
Most difficult part of your job?
People.
Oh. All right, people. Why?
Both staff and customers. I don't know.
Just give him a nudge. Needle's stuck here.
I think the good bit is the people, you work with some interesting people and some good characters and stuff. But I think sometimes people can be your worst nightmare as a manager. Stock and sales and stuff sort of tends to manage it yourself. It's all the other problems you get.
All the associated problems that come with people.
Yes.
The life stuff and just general stuff.
Stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Difficult part of the job?
I think only I could make it difficult, my job, because if I give somebody the wrong info, then that's I've made my whole life difficult again. If I'm late doing something, it's me that's created it. So really, that is part of what I would find difficult about my job. If I'm not on point and I give people wrong info, it all comes back to me. Hence, that's how I feel.
Crucial trait somebody needs to have in your role? Crucial trait someone needs to possess in your role?
I think they need to be honest in the respect where you have, if something's not going a customer's way, you tell them the truth if someone's not going to get delivered. I think you've got to sort of have them straight conversations with people. I think one of the sort of worst things that all customers will tell you is if they've been given bullshit about when the delivery is coming or whether someone's arriving. I think you just being honest about things, really, and being truthful about stuff. And just integrity, I think.
I totally agree. It's down to customers, again, isn't it? If you lie for the eye to them or if you get it wrong, tell them it's wrong, you know, and go along with it. At least they know where they stand.
Yeah.
If it's going to be 2 weeks away, tell them it's 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But tell them it's going to be there in a week. Because otherwise, they'll lose faith in you.
I think I learned that sort of lesson very early on in my career. And
me too, yeah.
Again, probably by somebody who would a bit old, a bit more experienced and a bit more old school. And if you got it wrong and got caught out by a customer, you literally got bucket back at head,
yes,
or something like that. Yeah. You won't do that again, will you?
And then the final one for you both, best piece of advice you've ever been given.
Somebody wants to talk again, sort of early on in my career. Somebody said to me that if you treat everybody like they're your customer, if you come to me with something, you're my customer. If I come to you with something, I'm your customer, then you can't really go wrong with that. And you're giving that service to whoever's in front of you at the time. And if you treat people like you want to be treated, then that's even better.
Yeah, great. It's a good one.
Never promise something you're not going to produce. So if you're going to promise something, it has to happen.
Yeah.
And when we're saying we're going to do it. And keep people on your footing so you're both friends at the end of it as well.
You're very similar, you two, aren't you? You're like chips off the old block.
We've got the same book, haven't we? We've been reading
it. But all your questions have been around people, respect, being honest, do what you say you're going to do. They're just good. Yeah. They're really good, basic.
Well, I mean,
traits, aren't they, that will serve you well in any part of your life, not just builders merchants.
Yeah, I mean, we could all sit here and sort of chase as sales budgets and everything else like that, but ultimately, if you don't treat your people well, they're not going to perform and they're not going to achieve. And that is important. It's a people business. People deal with us because they like us or they like us knowledge or whatever service we provide. And it's ultimately a people business, and that's probably why it is important to us, really.
And if you're not being honest to your customers and your staff, let's say, then you're not honest to yourself.
No.
Because you know full well it's not going to go that way. So honesty is always the best policy.
Well, listen, it's been a pleasure having you both.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. The podcast. Thanks for your time. Thanks for making me smile. Thanks for telling all of your stories, and thanks for all the wise words. Good luck in everything that you're doing at Wakefield.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And may you continue to be successful and have some fun while you're at it. To you, our viewers and listeners, thanks for joining us again. I hope you've enjoyed the episode with Martin and Steve. If you have, it would be great if you could like and subscribe on whatever platform you're looking at. If you could share the message about the 1840 podcast with anybody else in your circle who you think might be interested, that would be much appreciated as well. So until next time, we'll see you again. Thank you. Bye-bye.